Blog Talk Radio.
Failure is not final. Your life is not through. Now with your testimony, God can use you too. If you didn't.
And welcome to Atlanta Life Radio Presents, There is Life After Layoffs. Join the conversation with our show host and blogger, Allie, as Allie shares her journey of self-discovery and empowerment after being laid off. And we're real excited this evening because her co-host, Doc, will be with her this evening. The opinions expressed on this radio program are for discussion or inspirational purposes only. They do not serve as treatment or as a professional diagnosis. All listeners are advised that neither the hosts or Web Talk Radio agents shall be held liable for the content of programs, including advice given. All listeners are advised to make their own decisions based upon receiving appropriate consultation with a licensed professional and who have been given the opportunity to consider completely each listener's circumstances and not in reliance upon the content of this Web Talk Radio program. Now, as we say each and every week, grab your journal or a piece of paper and a pen so that you can take notes as you join us in this journey this evening. And now, join me in a virtual applause as I welcome our show host, Allie, and her co-host, Doc, to our show this evening. Take it away, Allie.
Hello, and welcome to the next episode of There is Life After Layoff Radio. I'm Allie, your host, and along with my regular co-host, Minister Dr. Regina Ward Porter, the founder of Elise Psychological Services and who is also a licensed professional counselor specializing in anxiety, adjustment, and depressive disorders. It is always our pleasure to be your guides as I take this journey of self-discovery and empowerment after being laid off and as Doc affirms normalcy of feelings while offering you practical solutions. Please join in on the conversation with us every Tuesday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. through the Atlanta Life Radio website at www.atlantaliferadio.com. And I also invite you to visit and follow me on my new and improved blog site at www.thereislifeafterlayoff.com. Please check it out and make sure that you post a comment. And you can also find out more about Doc and her services on her website by visiting www.elise, spelled E-L-I-S-E, psychologicalservices.com. And if you wish to contact us, you can certainly do so via email at thereislifeafterlayoff@gmail.com. And please continue to also follow us on Twitter. You will find me tweeting at AllieWard45, and you can follow Atlanta Life Radio on Twitter at ALR Radio. And I'm also on Instagram, so check me out at hashtag AllieWard45. And on behalf of Doc, Mel D, and myself, and the entire There is Life After Layoff radio team, we sincerely thank you for listening and for joining us this evening as we share with you our insights into the experience of being laid off. Now, it's at this time that I want to take a moment to first say hello and to welcome to my welcome on air with me tonight, my regular co-host, Doc. And thank you for being here with me this evening as we get ready to explore the topic of walking in love and how different cultures or religions express love. And I really think it's going to be an interesting conversation tonight, Doc, don't you?
Yes, Allie and Mildy, I am so excited. Once again, another exciting show, and I think this is very befitting. So yes. I'm excited to get started.
All right, all right. So thanks again for being here. But as always, before we get started, I want to say to those of you who may be listening in for the first time or who may be calling in for the first time, if you choose to do that, I want to remind you that we are here to use this forum as a way to uplift, empower, and hopefully inspire those of you who have been affected by a layoff. And we are not here to complain. We're not here to ridicule or point fingers at our former employers or colleagues or any individuals. And we are certainly not here to feel sorry for ourselves, but mostly we are here so that we can share with you our journeys of rediscovery and empowerment, but most of all, that there is life after layoff. Radio team, we are here to serve you, the community, as we give you a voice by offering you an opportunity to share your story, and we do welcome your calls. So if you want to call in and chime in on the conversation with us tonight, you can reach us by calling 347-324-5246 and make sure that you press the number 1 to be added into the on-air lineup in our host queue. And one last announcement before we get started. If you happen to miss a particular show, you can catch up on what you may have missed through the Atlanta Life Radio website. And as always, it's so convenient for you to listen to all of our past recorded shows because we have an automatic player box on the programming page. Just click on the show. It'll start playing for you. And what's so great, in addition to that, we are also on iTunes. So you can search for Atlanta Life Radio under podcast, and there you will find us. All of our past recorded shows are available, and tonight's live show will upload about an hour, maybe even less, after it airs tonight. So we sincerely thank you for continuing to tune in. So now we're ready to get started. And, you know, February started our celebration with Black History Month, and last week we were really fortunate to have joining us historian Ms. Zellie Rainey Orr, who kind of shared with us some information about some of the women trailblazers throughout Black history. And I thought it appropriate as we started celebrating Black History Month, and also the fact that we're approaching Valentine's Day on this Friday, I wanted to take a little bit of time to kind of talk about a few of the couples who have not only made contributions and sacrifices in the name of equality and freedom, but also whose relationships have really stood the test of time and have shown themselves approved through, you know, a testament of love and commitment to one another. And, you know, last week I briefly mentioned about Mildred Hemmings Carter and her husband, Herbert Carter, who, of course, he was a Tuskegee Airman, and how they met while she was studying to be a pilot in the civilian pilot training program down in Tuskegee. And they kind of met each other while they were both in the program. And, of course, because they were both students in the program, they could not fraternize, so they used to meet in midair and kind of blow kisses at each other, and he'd fly circles around her and what have you. And she couldn't participate as a, you know, in a, as a Tuskegee Airman. So she, you know, she stood firm to the cause because she stayed home and still participated in, you know, helping to further the cause while he went to war. So they actually married in 1942. And it was a month before Herbert became a second lieutenant and a year before he was sent off to the war. So that was one of the stories that I wanted to share. But then, just to take it one step further, everybody is familiar with Medgar and Murley Evers, okay?
Yes.
Medgar and Murley Evers, they were college sweethearts, actually. And they married on December 24th, 1951. And we all know that Medgar, he began his work after he graduated from college with a bachelor's degree in business. His work in the NAACP, and he traveled throughout the state to organize African Americans in peaceful protests, you know, and voter registration drives. He was elected as the organization's first field secretary, where he continued to, you know, speak on behalf of his people. But then tragically, we all know that story where on June 12th, 1963, he was actually shot in the back in his own driveway. And we're all familiar with that story. But just to show you that she, Murley was still committed to the cause, because she then dedicated herself to carrying the torch and honoring her husband's memory, because Murley picked up the torch and began traveling around the world to emphasize the progress of the civil rights movement and the need to keep fighting for equality and justice, okay? So that's another story of a couple who came together in marriage, and then one was struck down, the other picked up the torch and carried it forward. And, of course, we cannot talk about couples if we, you know, don't mention Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and Coretta Scott King, who are from, you know, Atlanta, our hometown heroes, so to speak, or civil rights workers. And they were married in June 18th in 1953 in Marion, Alabama. And, you know, he had actually pretty much after an hour of meeting her made up in his mind. I read something that he made up his mind about an hour after he had met her that she was the one and that they ought to get married. And, of course, Coretta wasn't having it. So she said that she wasn't looking for a husband, but she thought he was a wonderful human being, okay? So she continued to resist his overtures, but he still persisted. And she then just said that she had to kind of pray about it. And it's funny what I read. I found she said that she had a dream, okay? And then in that dream, she was made to feel that she should allow herself to be open and stop fighting the relationship. Now, isn't that funny how then at the end of his life, his speech was, "I have a dream"?
Mm.
I thought that was kind of wow. So then as I keep it moving, we all know that after Martin died, Coretta carried the torch forward for him. You know, she was and Martin was said to, quoted as saying that my devoted wife has been a constant source of consolation to me through all the difficulties, and my wife was always stronger than I was through the struggle, which is wow. But he realized her strength, and he often credited her as being his rock. And another couple that, when I think of black love, strong black love, Ruby Dee and Ozzie Davis.
Oh, yes.
You know, when you think about them, you think about how long, you know, their marriage lasted until, you know, recently, probably about 4 years ago, Ozzie, you know, passed away. They were married in 1948. And they actually took up residence in the city where I grew up, Doc, in New Rochelle, and they have lived there since 1960, and she still lives there now. And I kind of knew that in the back of my mind, but I didn't remember till I read it. But they were also civil rights activists, and they were very close friends of Malcolm X, Jesse Jackson, and Martin Luther King Jr., and Ozzie actually delivered the eulogy at Malcolm X's funeral, okay? And Ruby Dee is also a survivor of breast cancer for more than 30 years, okay? And she's also your Sara of Delta Sigma Theta,
yes.
Right? And I know you knew that. And as we keep it moving, and certainly not least, because I don't want to take up too much time, but certainly not least, we have to mention our president and our first lady, Barack and Michelle Obama. And we all know that the odds that they faced, they met, of course, back when they were both working at a law firm. And, you know, she has stood by his side. And a lot of people wondered whether or not their relationship would weather the White House. But we all know that it has. And the couple can be described as a love story as they have survived through the storm of life and politics, okay? And so, you know, the Obamas' love affair, they continue to make news, and at their inauguration celebrations, they dance with one another, and their relationship is just a testament of really committed black love. That's what I think of when I see them. So as I continue keeping it moving and talking about what I think about when I think about walking in love, I'd have to say that, Doc, at this point in my life, not only does it mean that if you're going to walk in love, I think you have to be willing to serve, okay, and take care of others even if you don't feel like it. That's what walking in love means. It also means that you have to be willing to do what is right when no one else is looking, okay? I mean, and when you really think about that, and if we're all honest, for most of us, that's a challenge because, you know, personally speaking, I have to say that it wasn't until I really started focusing on working on my relationship with God that I even realized that my behavior, which included my words, my actions, or my thoughts, was not in keeping with walking in love. And it was almost like it was a light bulb moment for me. I guess I had finally matured enough spiritually to the point where I no longer had the need to be right. And I think I talked about this before when, you know, I was in the middle of a heated argument with my husband, and the Holy Spirit just arrested me immediately, and I backed down, and I made the statement that I'd rather have peace than I needed to be right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, believe me, with my personality, that's huge. So I knew that the Holy Spirit was working on me and God was not through with me yet. So, you know, I had to really make a choice. Either I was going to continue to create and welcome turmoil into my life and into my relationships, or I was going to seek peace and walk in love. So that was a choice that I had to make. And it is an everyday battle. And it is hard not to give into my emotions and, you know, when I'm tired or whatever and lash out in anger or frustration. But that is the time when I do seek God's help and the help of the Holy Spirit. And then, you know, they have helped me to recognize those times when I'm most vulnerable, okay? And those are those times when I have to really stop and say, okay, God, I need you. And one of those barometers that they've showed me is that I look at the fruit of the Spirit. Okay, of course, it's love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, and faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. So I kind of use that as a barometer because you know what? We are going to be known by our fruit, and people are going to be looking, especially when they know you're a Christian, they're going to be looking to see that you're actually walking in what you're talking about. And so, you know, I pray every day, God, show me how I can be of service to you. How can I serve you and your people and how can I just serve others, you know, in my journey? And another light bulb moment was that when I finally learned about how one of the most deceptive snares is that the enemy uses against us, and I think I've mentioned this before, is the spirit of offense. You know, it is so, and I think it's probably one of the toughest obstacles that we as Christians have, that we do struggle with. And I made reference to a book that I read called The Bait of Satan by John Bevere. And it really, really changed my life, you know, because it helped me see that, you know, the offense and not being able to forgive people when they wronged me, you know, was hurting my walk in love. Now, just to engage you, I want, you know, we're going to go back a little bit later and we're going to talk about the other side of love. But right now, I want to engage you in the conversation because, you know, when I thought about our topic for tonight, it immediately brought to mind the song What the World Needs Now is Love that was recorded by Dionne Warwick back in 1966. And what a lot of people don't know is that Dionne Warwick actually originally turned that song down. And it was actually recorded by someone else by the name of Jackie DeShannon, who was an American singer-songwriter. And then Dionne later recorded a version of it in 1966. But now when I mention that song, What the World Needs Now, now I want to kind of talk to you, Doc, about, and as I drop that little piece of random trivia there, I want to talk to you about how different religions or cultures actually express love and how you know, different religions may express love. And I kind of want to engage you in the conversation.
Good. Allie, I must first admit that you're preaching to me. As a newlywed, I must admit I'm a work in progress. So when you stated the point about peace, you'd rather have peace than to engage where a conversation can escalate. And one thing I tell clients all the time, we have a misnomer about communication. A lot of times people feel that communication automatically leads to confrontation. So I want to dispel that effective communication actually keeps you from having a confrontation.
Okay.
So
okay.
I think that's one of the first things. But as you ask about love in different cultures, I did a lot of research on that for the book that I'm currently writing. And what I found in that is that love is not just an emotion or a feeling or expression. It actually is the healer to all the ills in the world. Many times when we look at the news, we're seeing so much devastation, and love actually heals that. And how Webster defines love is it's having a strong affection for another person out of kinship or personal ties, and it's unselfish, loyal, and benevolent concern for the good of another. Or a fatherly concern of God for humankind. So those things that I pick out about that, again, it's unselfish, it's loyal, and it's benevolent. The encyclopedia states that love refers to a variety of different feelings, states, and attitudes, and it ranges from interpersonal affection to pleasure, and it can refer to an emotion or a strong attraction. So as you stated, different cultures express love differently, and I'm going to start off with the Chinese culture. Confucius is one of, I guess, their philosophers that express love through Ren, and it's spelled R-E-N, and some of these words have tripped me up, so I'm going to try to pronounce them. but Ren is benevolent love, and what it focuses on, it displays, again, benevolent love by performing acts of kindness, or the love from a parent to its child, or the loyalty to the king. However, there was another philosopher named Mo Zi, and he felt like that Confucius love just focused on the family and attachment to family and friends. And what he came up with was a universal love. So he felt like that love should have been or should be more universal. So he came up with the concept called AI. And that's spelled AI, as it's spelled. And again, this is a more universal love, and that's where more acts of kindness comes in. And it's not just focused on the love for a friend or a family. It goes or expands out towards love for everyone. The Parisian culture says that everything is encompassed by love, and all is for love, starting from loving your family, your friends, your husband, your wife, and then eventually reaching out to the divine love, which is the ultimate goal in life. So similar to the Chinese, they feel like family, husband, wives, and friends are important, but the ultimate love is, again, divine love that stretches out past just your family and your friends. The Japanese, on the other hand, they have a word that is pronounced ame, which means indulgent dependence, and it is part of the child-rearing culture. In the Japanese culture, mothers are expected to hug and indulge their children, and children are expected to reward their mothers by clinging and serving. So for the Japanese culture, love is expressed in servitude. And the, in the Turkish culture, the word love has several meanings. A person can love a god, a person, their parents, or the family. But when that person just loves one special person, that word is called ask, and it's a feeling to love or being in love. And from a religious view, Christianity, the Christian understanding of love comes from God, and one of the main loves that is expressed through Christianity is agape love, which means an unselfish love for others. In agape love, there's charitable giving, it's selfless, and it's unconditional. In the Judaism religion, in Hebrew, ahava is most commonly used term that means both interpersonal love and the love between God and God's creation. And the commandment to love other people is given in the Torah, Torah, which means love your neighbor like yourself. And that comes from in the Torah, Leviticus chapter 19, verse 18. And in the Torah's commandment to love God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And in the again, in Torah, it could be found in Deuteronomy 6:5. And lastly, in Islam, love encompasses the Islamic view of life as universal brotherhood that applies to all who hold faith. Mm-hmm. In their Quran, Muslims exhort believers to treat all people, those who do not persecute them, to have a deep kindness. So they believe in, again, a universal love. So what I found important in all of this, each culture has a way and each religion has a way that they express love, and love is top of what they feel like you've reached the ultimate, I guess, goal in a culture and a religion when you love, and not only love the people that are close to you, but when you can share love universally. Wow. And, again, it goes back to what I'm finding, that, again, love is a healer of all ills in our world.
Right. Wow. That is so interesting. But you know what? Like you just stated, the common thread in especially as a Christian, we are to love beyond just our family.
Exactly.
And, you know, that's the ultimate. And, you know, but then just the adverse of that is what I stated earlier, and what I had to realize and what I try to do is to love when no one, when I don't think anyone is looking, because, okay, you can go beyond your house and your family and be loving towards those people, and then you come home and you got a turmoil.
Right, right.
You know, so it's really tough to you got to try to balance, but that's why God wants us to lean on Him. And I don't believe that we're expected to do it by ourselves.
Exactly.
You know?
You said something interesting. Again, as I've done my research, what it seemed in different cultures and religion, it sounds like that it is understood or it's easy to love the people that are closest to you.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, the ultimate love is to go beyond that and love universally. But what I found, and I don't know if you remember in one of our earlier episodes, what God started dealing with me was that I was more critical to the people that were closest to me because
mm-hmm.
they were so close to me. And sometimes
mm-hmm.
we have what we call, we take a person for granted or
yeah.
That person, I just, I guess, becomes, you're used to that person, for
mm-hmm.
lack of a better term. So in that, for me, again, I found myself, it was easier to express or be less critical to people I didn't know. And
mm-hmm.
so for me, it was to bring it closer to home and to be more understanding and caring and compassionate to my loved ones closer to me.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's been a struggle, but I see growth, and I, like I said, and that's no joke, because with my personality, as headstrong as I am and as headstrong as my husband is, woo!
And two cars is correct.
Yeah. Woo! So that was huge for me. I was like, wow. I mean, I surprised myself. I was like, where'd that come from? But, you know, we are a work in progress.
Exactly, exactly.
He does not expect perfection, but he does expect progress, and I say that all the time, you know. Well, at this point, I think we're going to go ahead and take a short station break, and when we come back, we will continue our conversation, and we will take your calls if we have any calls. If you want to say Happy Valentine's Day to someone special who may be listening, then by all means, please do so. You can reach us by calling 347-324-5246, and please make sure that you press the number 1 to be added to the on-air host queue. You are listening to There Is Life After Layoff Radio with your hosts, Allie and Doc, so please stay tuned.
Failure is not final. Your life is not through. God can use you too.
are just joining us, you are listening to Atlanta Life Radio Presents There Is Life After Layoff. We want to take this moment to thank all of our sponsors and to especially thank our faithful listeners who tune in each and every week to listen to our show. Without your support, this show would not be possible. If anyone is interested in coming on air as a special guest to share their story and journey after being laid off, please contact us. Email me at mdavis@atlantaliferadio.com. Again, that's email me at mdavis@atlantaliferadio.com. Now back to our very, very special program about love. Allie?
All right. We are back, and if you're just joining us, welcome, and you are listening to There Is Life After Layoff Radio at www.atlantaliferadio.com. I'm your host, Allie, and along with my regular co-host for tonight, who is Doc, we encourage you to join us every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m., and you can also follow me on my blog at www.thereislifeafterlayoff.com. We're on Twitter. You will find me tweeting at AllieWard45, and Atlanta Life Radio is on Twitter at ALR Radio, so please follow us. And now, we were having a very interesting conversation, Doc, before the break, and I actually want to kind of take a moment to remind you about a conversation that we had about a week ago, I guess, or maybe even less than that. But and if you recall, earlier in the program, I talked about, you know, the other side of love. And mm-hmm. do you recall the conversation that you and I had when we were talking about, you know, I was struggling in a particular area where I felt guilty because I was not necessarily, I felt like I wasn't walking in love. Like, this just for the lack of a better way to explain, when I was chastising my children, you know, I was feeling guilty because then I felt like, okay, I blew it, you know, if I yelled or whatever I had to do. I felt guilty, and you brought up a very interesting point about that being religion, and I wanted you to kind of talk a little bit about that.
Okay, yes. I do remember that conversation, and I'm actually glad it was brought up. So it's something that we could educate even our listening audience about, because that's one thing I try to educate my clients. So often I hear clients come in the office and they are driven by guilt and feeling like if they did something wrong or what they perceive wrong, that God is going to punish them. Mm-hmm. And I, again, often try to educate that that's not God. God is love. And mm-hmm. So many people have been taught through religion that God sits up high and is ready to dish out or pass out punishments. But mm-hmm. He desires that we live an abundant life. And if we live in fear or if we live in a place of guilt, actually those are spirits from the enemy. Mm-hmm. And it keeps us down. So what you and I were talking about is freeing yourself that, again, the difference between religion and spirituality. Religion is about rules, and it's about rituals, and it's real rigid. And mm-hmm. it actually turns a lot of people off because they feel like I can't do right. So what's the point of even trying to live like that? And, again, I really truly feel like that's a trick of the enemy, and it's almost like there's been a billboard or a poster board or a book that tries to tell us that this is God. But, again, God is love, and that's the opposite of what love is. God is like a mother or father that when a child does wrong, there's still that unconditional love, that agape love that, yes, I want you, like you said, to not be perfect, to definitely strive to do better, but I'm not going to just punish you or I'm not going to cast you off to damnation because you've made an error. Because, again, as Christians, that's what Jesus died for anyway.
Right.
Our sins, our wrongs. It's when we love God that we want to do right.
Right.
That's
right.
When we want to stop, you know, what we've been called as sinful ways. So that's a big difference. Again, the difference between spirituality, religion, and how God, you know, really views us striving to do better in life.
Right. Because you know what? What's really important is not the fact, yes, you know, we are to fellowship and go to church, but then what's more important than that is that we need to get out into the world, okay,
mm-hmm.
and do
mm-hmm.
things for other people and show the world Jesus.
That's true.
Okay? And then especially for those who may not deserve it or won't get it while we're acting that way toward them. And that reminded me of, and I think I mentioned this to you, about something that my mom always taught me. When people are mistreating you, you always act the complete opposite of how they expect you to act.
Right.
And that's one lesson that I always remember that she taught me, because then they're not going to understand why you're still being nice to them.
Exactly.
But that's what Jesus and that's what God expects us to do. You know, and that conversation also brought to mind to me that the other side of love is that time when sometimes there is a time when you have to confront somebody, okay, and not feel guilty about it. Because, you know, I've had situations in family relationships where I choose to speak the truth and tell people what they need to know and not what they want to hear, because I know that that's me loving them and telling them the truth. Is only going to help them rather than, because me telling them what they want to hear is only going to hurt them. So
exactly.
There are those times when we need to stand up and confront and not enable people. And that I think that's the case with parents and children. So there are times, you know, God, it does say in the Word that we are to chastise our children, spare the rod, spoil the child. That doesn't mean abuse them, but that means that we have a responsibility to make sure that we're teaching them right and teaching them the right way to love and walk in their lives. Don't you agree with that?
And I think we've talked about this before, but understanding early on that children begin learning to manipulate or see that, okay, my parent is feeling guilty or feeling whatever about chastising me. So then they begin to play that parent.
Yeah.
You and I talked about how oftentimes children act different. Something that they would do in front of one parent, they would definitely not try that in front of another parent.
Right.
Because they know off hand that, again, maybe this parent is feeling guilty or trying to, quote unquote, walk in love. But there's a saying, we teach people how to treat us, and it starts even with our children, because early on when they are in their crib and they begin to cry and we run and we pick them up, give them a bottle, they begin, the light bulb goes off that, wow, this is working. So then they continue to cry, and then they grow up to adults pouting, crying when they don't get what they want, because they're used to, again, getting what they want when they cry. So, again, we teach people how to treat us. Another thing to understand, and I said it earlier, meaning that communication is not confrontation. So, again, I really feel like that keeps a person stuck and bound. We've been taught to sweep things under the rug, and I see it over and over again. You know, people that have been abused, either emotionally, physically, sexually, however, because they've been taught to sweep things under the rug, or we don't talk about that, or we dismiss that, then that contributes to the ills of our world, because they don't know what to do with, and they're keeping that on the inside, and it becomes cantankerous like a cancer. It begins to eat at them and destroy them, and then the cycle continues to perpetuate itself. And from a spiritual spiritual expression, that's what we call generational curses. But as soon as you start speaking, you begin to break that cycle. And again, understanding, I think we have to realize what is a trick of an enemy, because if I can keep your mouth closed, if I can keep you bound, if I can keep you paralyzed, then you won't be free, then I can continue this again through generations. So again, we have to learn to say that it's okay to speak about things. That's freedom. It's freedom in our voice.
Absolutely.
Again, it's okay to teach people how to treat us.
Exactly. Exactly.
And with that, that goes with, you know, I think when we were talking about the other side of love, I what stood out to me, the Yana of Van Zandt series, Fix My Life.
Yeah.
I remember, I remember there was a family, and the father in the family was being very rude to her, and she was bold in saying, "You do not have permission to. I don't give you permission to treat me that way."
I remember
Right, and we have to be, you know, very bold and stand up for our rights, and again, teach people how to treat us. So that's the other side of love. And again, walking in love does not make you vulnerable. It doesn't make you, for lack of a better term, I'm not a punk because I'm walking in love, you know. You will still know how to treat me, so.
Right. I mean, we really, and women, speaking to women directly, please understand and know that you do not have to be abused. You know, you have to know when to say no. And speak up, and you made a very valid point. A lot of why we don't speak up is a generational thing. You know, back in the day, as they would say, you just didn't say certain things. You didn't talk about certain things. And then, you know, now in my generation, then in you know, generations to come, then things are starting to reveal itself. You know, family histories are starting to come out as we're starting to take care of our parents and what have you, and, you know, things are starting to come unraveled, so to speak, and everything is coming to the light. But, you know, just like with spoiled milk, it rises to the top.
That's
it needs to be exposed for what it is, because I've made a decision a long time ago when I, you know, became a mom, that there were certain things that I was going to put a stop to. As far as, you know, how things that happen in family or whatever, I refuse to allow it to go another generation.
Right.
And, you know, but that's the choice that I made, you know. And you're right, because, boy, I got two kids that are smart and know how to play mommy.
Right, right.
But, you know, like you said, that conversation that you and I had, and I'm glad that I was able to, you know, share that with you, because you really gave me a whole new outlook on the situation. And, you know, I had a whole different attitude after that conversation, a whole different approach, and, you know, there's a new sheriff in town.
Right, right. And what I like, to the confirmation, because I remember, I know you love Joyce Myers, and you said, you know, shortly after the conversation when you was listening to a message from her, she shared some things about that really confirmed that. So, you
exactly.
know,
and it's funny how the God will lead us to those things.
Exactly. It's funny, you know, even talking about, again, being taught in families to sweep things under the rug, and the saying is, you know, what's happens in this house stays in this house, and our listening audience may realize that that's been a big slogan for Vegas. What happened in Vegas stays in Vegas, but the other part of that, what do we call Vegas? Sin City.
Sin.
So,
oh, that's good right there.
We're keeping sin in the house. So do we want to keep the doors of sin open in our house? So,
wow,
again, I'm asking our audience to free yourself. What happens in your house if it's not right? Free yourself. Speak up about it. Get help. You know, get professional help. Get counsel. Get spiritual counseling, godly counsel, professional counsel. But free yourself. It doesn't have to, or you don't have to stay stuck.
Right.
In that
situation.
Yeah, so
that's really good right there. And wow, look at the time. But as we get ready to close out another very interesting, thought-provoking episode, I know you want to kind of take a moment to relate our topic back to Scripture, as you do so well. And then I think you said you wanted to share with our listeners a few stories related to acts of kindness that we saw during the recent snowstorm that we had here a week or so, a week and a half ago, and now guess what? We're getting ready to have another one. So this is perfect timing, deja vu
right,
moment right here.
Right,
so.
I think it's so befitting. So tonight, instead of closing out with practical solutions, I am going to call this segment Spreading Love Can Be Infectious. And we heard so much, and even nationally and around the world, people heard about the snowstorm that hit Atlanta about 2 weeks ago, and how millions of people or thousands of people were stranded on different highways, stuck in the cars. But the other part of that was there were many acts of kindness. And just to name a few, there were two friends that made over 300 ham and cheese sandwiches and went back out in the storm to hand out to people stuck in traffic. There was a police officer that helped deliver a baby on one of the expressways. Many individuals walked up and down the highways and byways with hot chocolate, hot tea, food and drink to hand out to people stuck on the highway. There were people that drove four-wheelers to help get people out of the cold and take them to nearby churches. Many individuals actually opened their homes to stranded motorists that were nearby. So if they had a home nearby, they actually opened their home up to strangers, near strangers. There were many stories of gas station managers that allow stranded individuals stay in the gas station and provided foods. Likewise, there were many grocery stores, drug stores that allowed people to sleep up and down aisles. Chick-fil-A, Home Depot, Target were others that, again, allowed people to sleep in break rooms. I even had a client that stated that Kroger's opened the door up to many people, and what they did, the boxes that they used once they stocked the shelves, they cut open those boxes and made those into mats so people could sleep up and down the highway. So to actually hear, you know, live stories of the acts of kindness really was hot chocolate to the soul, I would like to say. And to pay homage to the principals and the teachers and the administration of school systems across Atlanta that took care of thousands of children that were stranded in the schools overnight, there was a lady that created a Facebook page to connect individuals with family and friends that was actually stuck in the storm.
Wow.
There were people that were helping direct traffic and pushing stranded cars to safety. There were stories of food delivery trucks, truck drivers, that they actually passed out food and drinks and water from their food delivery truck to stranded motorists. And drivers with large vehicles offered rides to stranded motorists. So it was just a number of, again, acts of kindness in the midst of something that could have been seen, you know, as deplorable or something that could have been seen as evil.
Right.
So,
and you know what? It brought to mind that even not just in Atlanta, but 9/11. You remember way back to 9/11 how this country, the act of kindness that we saw as a country when 9/11 took place was just
exactly
phenomenal.
Exactly.
And, you know, but it makes me wonder that, you know, let's not wait till a moment of turmoil or tragedy or whatever to have random acts of kindness or just be kind. You imagine what you know, good this world could do for one another? I mean, how uplifting it'd be if we didn't wait till a tragedy to just reach out to our fellow man, our brothers and sisters, you know, because it does, and I'm a strong believer, you know, I say this all the time, it takes a village, you know, with raising my children, but we are our brother's keeper, you know. So let's not, you know, wait for a tragedy to just do something nice for somebody, you know, and do it. Don't do it because you think you're going to get some accolades out of it. That's another thing.
Yes, that is a very poignant point. And that leads me to tonight's scripture, which is 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 4 through 7. And it says, love is patient. Love is kind. Love does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It is not rude. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices in truth. It always protects. It always trusts. It always hopes. And it always perseveres. So what I say tonight is try love.
Right. And you know what? Earlier you mentioned that I was preaching to you, you know, as a newlywed. That's one of the things that I had to learn in my relationship with my husband, that love covers. It doesn't expose. So in those times when I was feeling like, you did this, 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 and this, I had to check myself. Because it's so easy to do that.
Right,
but then,
right.
You know, I realized that, you know what, I need to cover. I need to cover and not expose.
I think you made a good point. I think it's human nature for the most part to feel like you have to get the word, the last word or one up on a person. So, that definitely takes training.
You got
especially
that right.
When you've been a certain way for, you know, so many years. So it's definitely not an overnight thing. And when you're talking about being a parent, also understanding that being a parent doesn't come with the owner's manual.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
That's also, you know, a daily work in progress, too. So
absolutely. Absolutely. It really does take work.
Right.
You just really, but what I came to realize in my journey is that, and what I've learned is that the one who is the more spiritually mature needs to be the one doing the right thing for the longest. If that makes
well,
sense.
Lord help me.
Oh, God, that's funny. Oh, my goodness. So we just have to sometimes, and I think as women, you know, yes, the man is the head of the house, but I think a lot of times women actually set the tone in their homes.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, the other part of it, I wouldn't trade it, the companionship
right.
for anything. I was just watching a series that talked about broken heart, being brokenhearted, and it said, you know, if you wonder why a person dies about a year after their spouse dies, is because of the loneliness and the broken heart. So
wow.
And, you know, love and the heart is very important. That leads me to this last thought, because I don't know if you know that this month is Heart Awareness Month.
Oh.
And people across the nation are asked to wear red to support heart healthy. And, you know, I admonish our listeners to definitely go and get checked out, because one of the stats is that it's women suffer a lot of the symptoms are silent. So and we have higher numbers of strokes, heart attacks. So go get your blood pressure and your cholesterol checked to make sure you are heart healthy.
Right. And as we get ready to close out tonight, I want to share, I don't know if many people may know this, but those who may remember Shirley Temple Black, she passed away last night at the age of 85.
Wow, I was just doing some research on her about a month ago. So, wow, okay.
She passed away last night at 85 in her home in San Francisco with her friends and family. And one of the things that I found that she said was that she was receiving a Lifetime Achievement Award by the Screen Actors Guild. And she said one of the things that she was quoted as saying is that the greatest job that she ever had was that of being a wife, a mother, and a grandmother, and that the greatest thing was that nothing was better than true love.
Right.
So, you know, our condolences go out to her family and friends and loved ones, and she will be missed. And my 5-year-old son had just discovered her and loved watching her movies. So, you know, I hadn't shared that with him yet, but I will.
Wow, that's great information. She definitely, her last husband died some years ago, and she spoke of being very heartbroken and lonely since his death, and she didn't leave her house.
She was recluse after that. So
exactly.
But anyway,
great information. Great show.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for being here as always, Doc. And
thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of the Darris Lagerfeld-Layoff radio team, we thank all of you for joining us on this journey. We don't take it for granted that you've chosen to spend this time with us each and every week. And we pray that you'll continue to tune in. And next week, we will be joined by our special guest, Ms. Marsha Brown from Hands On Atlanta. And if you recall, she was one of those people who was stuck during the storm the last time trying to get home. So we hope that we will be able to have her on next week. And then please look forward to the start of the men's series on February 25th with our very own Brother Pass. So as we close out tonight, we continue to urge you to be encouraged. And yes, although it may be hard to walk away from something, especially when you don't know what you're walking towards, just know that when God is in it, all things are possible and new. Continue to join us on this journey and take a leap of faith past the fear in your life. Know that the bigger the obstacle, the bigger the blessing. But most of all, remember, there is life after layoff. Thank you and good night.
Failure is not final. Your life is not through. God can use you too. If you didn't know the pain of life, wouldn't know the joy of life and how God always brings you through. No need for complaining, just look at this, it's just training to be ready, what God has for you. Tell yourself, no,
I'm not giving
in you, Lord, I have my faith in. Even when it seems that's when you look, that's when your breakthrough will begin.
Celebrate. I have ever known has come from you alone.